your pricing to cost calculation is not correct. So some people just guess them, oh, let's say a burger, right? You think it says $20 now, push come to shove should be what, $6, 30% for the meat, the lettuce, you know, all included. So you want to make sure that's the cost. If it's not the cost, if it's $8, now you're at 40%. That's going to screw up your whole calculation. It's going to be very tough for you to be profitable.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP. Regular listeners will notice a slight change to my strap line there, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, we've got Aldo Alpril. Pronouncing it even right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And Aldo, today we are going to chat about something that actually many of the guests on the show have talked about. They go almost at pains to explain how they are not tax consultants as a fractional CFO. But we're going to dig into today why sometimes you need, or you at least certainly need, your fractional or full-time CFO to be working closely with a tax professional. We're going to talk about Aldo's background coming up in the restaurant business, notoriously difficult business, and some of the lessons he's had from that. We're going to talk about some of the things you should be considering about when you're, as your business grows and gets to a larger scale, the things that may need you to think about tax a little bit earlier than most people. And then finally, we're going to wind it up by talking about what it's like to build a tax business in particular. And it's going to be a good chat. So Aldo, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe we could just kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
James, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Something that people don't know, a couple of things. I love to travel. I like to hit up a lot of international destinations. My long-term plan is travel while I work. So that's definitely me, and the missus are working on that. But yeah, we enjoy traveling. That's something that not a lot of people know.
I love traveling too. Two follow-up questions. Where's the best city in the world, as far as you're concerned? And where's the top of your bucket list?
Ooh, that's the best city in the world. I would say Paris is a great city. I had low expectations, but when I visited, it was a great experience. Buenos Aires is a great city. Yeah. I like steak and wine. I would say if you give me two, those are great. Mexico City is another great city. I really enjoy myself there.
Yeah, great. I love Buenos Aires. I think it's my favorite city, actually. Anyone asks me, that's where I pick. Because it's just, they have that crazy tram, the A-line, which is, yeah. It's made of wood. It's like it's like it was made in the whatever 1930s or 40s, and it's still going. And it's got like a 100-watt bulb out the front. And you get, it's like going on, it's going like on a Disney ride or something. You get in and it goes off, but yeah.
Very awesome. Cool school for sure.
Yeah, super school. And has that faded grandeur, that sort of beautiful big boulevards and stuff. Very good. And the Malongas and stuff. Okay, all right. We can't talk all the time about our favorite cities, but I'll back you up on that one. Yeah, okay. So maybe you can just, you're based out in there in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yep.
So yeah, tell us a bit about how you've come up into working, building your tax practice there, and what it's like, what is it like to do business in Phoenix?
Absolutely. So I am a CPA, certified public accountant, licensed in Arizona. Been actually licensed for 20 years now. I know, time flies.
And you're too young for now.
It's all the filters. It's the filters. That's basically what it is. But yeah, I have a good mix of experience. I have corporate experience. I work with large organizations like American Express, General Electric, in the restaurant industry that you mentioned, mm-hmm. BF Chang, Grimaldi's Pizzeria, mm-hmm. other firms as well. But I also have worked with several business owners, mainly here in Phoenix, Arizona. I do have some clients across the country, but really the concentration is Arizona. Although as my practice has evolved, it's a virtual practice now, so I can really help anybody within the U.S.
Yeah. And you said you've grown up with sort of restaurants. Was that in your family or was that just your early career? How did you get first fall in love with restaurants?
Yeah, actually both, right? So I grew up in a restaurant. My parents used to own a seafood restaurant back in the old country in Peru, in Lima. It's a family thing. Everybody helps out. Me, even as a little kid, I would help out sweep or pick up things or stock things up or whatever needs to be done as a little kid. As I was growing up, I was running food to the tables or cleaning tables or whatnot. So definitely I grew up in that environment. I love food. That's another thing that you should know about me. I really enjoy having a great meal. That's something that as when I was growing up or whatnot, and then I went to college, I did not have the intention to start a restaurant because I know how much hard work there is involved into it. But I always appreciated restaurants and then people that work with restaurants or whatnot.
Was it your parents that were in the restaurant or was it in your
family? My parents? My parents, my siblings, pretty much everybody, all my siblings had at some point in time did help out in the restaurant. It's kind of like a rite of passage or whatnot. But yeah, pretty much. But again, only my parents. After that, none of my siblings got into the business. Maybe they did a little bit of catering here and there, but nah, they did not expand and open their own business. I believe because again, so much work, right? You're working all the holidays, Christmas Eve, New Year's. Really, you don't, when everybody's partying, you're working type of deal. And that's definitely a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah, and there's an amazing, I had a brief period working in my brother-in-law's burrito bar in London, and what blew me away was the amount of skill. We all walk into restaurants every day and you think, okay, this is how hard can this be? You got a kitchen, you got some food, but there's a lot of moving parts to make that business work financially. That's why most of them don't work, right? They're notorious for going out of business.
Right.
And maybe just talk a little bit about, from a financial perspective, the chef is the key player, and I didn't realize this, but like a chef is a key player in the keeping the whole thing working. Maybe you could just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. That's the benefit that I got, learning experience when I got to work with large organizations like PF Chang's and PayWay. So stated a lot of business restaurants start with mom and pop, maybe one, two, three, four locations, and really they're not looking at the cost. We got something in the restaurant industry called prime cost, which
Right.
is the two biggest components that you have. It's going to be labor and it's going to be cost of goods sold. Basically, the food stuff and the ingredients that you buy to put a dish together. So the rule of thumb is about 60% now. We're in inflationary times or whatnot, so that could vary up or down depending on the type of industry you're in. So it could be 55, 65, or even 70. But again, you want to know as a business owner what your prime cost is going to be. And trust me, if you don't, it's going to be a world of pain. And your chef is key part of that because your chef is the one who's going to be in control to get your cost of goods sold under control, right? So
Yeah.
let's say if it's 30%, you need to have the chef to be whole. I mean, he or she is going to have to help you figure out that's your target. But let's say 30%. They are the ones responsible for maintaining that 30%.
So I see, like I saw, because in my experience, I saw, I didn't realize, I thought chefs just cook stuff, but really there was a massive skill in figuring out Tuesday, that's a slightly quieter day, trying to order the right amount of food, getting it from your supplier, getting it out onto the trays in our place. It all came down to a knife edge at the end of the day, basically how much was going to be left behind. Like how much the perfect day was like everything just sold out, the last customer goes out, and that's it. But it was an incredible skill to be able to do that because you really need to know a lot about the entire business. It wasn't just a Tuesday, it was what time of year it was, et cetera, et cetera. And this,
Right.
all of this responsibility is on the shoulders of someone, one person normally, as I saw it, is like a chef who was like not necessarily at the top of the pay scale in terms of a lot of places. The chef, these aren't highly paid positions, and yet they're the linchpin for hundreds of thousands of euros of dollars of profits or not. So how does, I'm curious then, how do you, so I saw it just at a small level, but how does like an operation like PF Chang sort of structure that, because they can't be down in each restaurant trying to figure out what to order, but how do they share sort of experience between different restaurants, or how do they help the chefs to make sure that they're hitting the right margin target? Did it
Yeah.
bonus them? What, how do you go about it?
Yeah, two ways. So, right, you have the chef or the GM. So usually, and again, depends on the structure, but a lot of large organizations do this, is you create a bonus structure for the GM, the general manager of the restaurant, and also the
Right.
chef. So basically, if you hit certain targets like cost of goods sold, the manager would be more like labor, back of the house, front of the house. But you hit these KPIs basically to say if you hit these numbers, then you're gonna get bonused out. And depending on the organization, they're gonna do it monthly, quarterly, or annually, depending how that goes. But yeah, there is gonna obviously there is an incentive right there for the chef and the GMs to make sure that those numbers are what they're supposed to be. And this is a week-to-week business, honestly. Those that wait monthly or even quarterly to me is too long. But most businesses, there are smaller restaurants, I would say a handful of units, they want to look at this at least on a monthly basis. But yeah, I remember looking at a weekly report on sales. So like you stated, the chef or the GM order the ingredients or the produce or whatever they need to do in order to minimize the spoilage. It's not only that. I mean, there is, you always say there's only always three things in the restaurant world in which your cost of goods sold are not going to work out. Number one is your pricing to cost calculation is not correct. So some people just guess them. Oh, let's say a burger, right? You think, say it's $20 now. Push come to shove should be what, six, sorry, nine, can you even do math right now? $6, 30% for the meat, the lettuce, all included. So you want to make sure that's the cost. If it's not the cost, if it's $8, now you're at 40%. It's going to screw up your whole calculation. It's going to be very tough for you to be profitable. And then the second thing, the other thing we're going to talk about, two is the spoilage that we already discussed. And three is food walking away. Rather, they're giving food away, to friends or somebody else, or they're comping too many meals and they're not accounting for it. That's another option and why your cost of goods sold are not on target.
Okay. It's difficult because if you're in a supermarket, you buy the can of beans for 20 cents, you sell it for 60. That's always going to be the same. It doesn't go off. It doesn't spoil. And that's easy. But for food, it's variable. So it's much harder. And when it came to food walking away, what strategies to try and mitigate that? Do you just have cameras everywhere or do you give people a certain quota or?
I would say inventory counts are key, right? Okay, so you want to have inventory counts at least on a monthly basis to see if the thing you have in the fridge is what you have in the fridge. Spoilage, usually most restaurants are going to have some kind of logs that like, oh, this is what happens. Okay, this is where the customer didn't like it. So we had to redo it, toss that, keep a log to just make sure and do a nightly count, weekly count to see how much food is walking away. Because also if there is too much spoilage or like rejects or whatnot, then there is a training issue that needs to be correct. But those are usually the reasons how that's done. I would say even inventory counts, sometimes it's not done by the chef, by the GM. So you don't have the same person doing it. So a little bit of separation of duties as well.
Got it.
But cameras, shoot, I have had clients that spent hours and hours looking at cameras. To me, that's very inefficient. But again, it's got a way to do things. But nowadays, it's just giving the responsibility to the chef and the GM, if you have one, to say, this is the target and where are we going to get do to get to that.
Yeah. Okay. So you just set the incentives. Show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcome, was it Charlie Munger says. Yeah. Okay. And then, all right, having been brought up through that, and I guess having corporate experience even in the food services industry, you decided not to focus on that for your own partnership. But when it came to going out on your own and building your own, what sort of structure do you have for your company? Do you have it as a partnership or what's your vision for how you're going to build it?
It's my own practice. And I even worked with restaurants after that. Again, I got a soft spot for restaurants or whatnot. I served as a fractional CFO for them in the past as well. Stepped away of being a fractional CFO for not only restaurants, but right now I still have some clients, but really concentrated on tax planning, which I know we'll discuss later.
So you went from restaurants and you had some restaurants offering that fractional CFO perspective, which is good. But then you've started to focus more on tax as a platform. So why was that? Why? Because a lot of people, if I don't want to be pejorative about it, like sometimes people are quite, they think being a fractional CFO it's a dirty word to be a taxation accountant, right? They don't see it as a high-minded objective, but you've taken a different approach here and you've decided, hold on, this is a good opportunity. So why have you gone focused on the tax area as a business opportunity? Let's not talk about how you serve your clients, but what is it like as a business to run a tax practice?
Right. Well, you're 100% right. Like even me, when I was not in tax, I said, oh, you're do taxes. And I'm like, I don't do taxes. So I totally can empathize with the fellow CPAs, fractional CFOs, where like they just pigeonhole you as, oh, you're a tax man. See you on April 15th type of deal. Once I realized that being in taxes, especially when you do tax planning, it's beneficial to me as a business owner, but also to my clients, business clients mostly, is that you're able to really help and solve a problem, which is, I'm very profitable right now. You know, when I get to these high tax brackets, I'm almost giving 50 cents on the dollar to the government. What can we do to mitigate that? So is my ability then, okay, so then that's where I come in, I bring my skill sets to be able to minimize your taxes, looking at your situation and structuring things the way which are going to be minimized. And again, it could be a variety of things on how we do that, but really you're able to show a return on the client's investment.
Yeah.
Usually I save my clients anywhere between $30,000 to $50,000 when we implement the tax plan. So that's not chump change, right? I would say most people would be definitely interested to look into that. I mean, it could be a little bit less, it could be a lot more depending on your tax situation, but I bring a tangible benefit to you as a tax planning expert. But again, it's, you know, the mindset is a little bit different. I think most tax professionals to the IRS. So time comes around, depending what kind of business you're in, but a lot of business owners are going to report on March 15th, not April 15th. It's like, hey, it's February. Submit all the books to the tax guy and he's going to prepare the tax returns and he will let you know the tax bill. There is not a lot of things that, you know, that the tax professional is going to be doing, because since the tax is already gone by, it's just not going to be, there's really not a lot they can do. And a lot of the tax professionals are just going to be like, just give me your information. I'll plug it in, put it into the system, and it's just going to spit out. I don't really have time to really analyze your taxes and see what we can do to help you save on taxes.
Yeah, because that's a thing, especially as people are growing to their entrepreneurial journey. I guess they might start off as a sole trader, start off as a small business. And, you know, the guy who's doing your taxes then is probably the guy still doing your taxes, maybe up to 5-10 million, because he's a good guy and he's always kept me out of jail. But there's always this idea that my accountant is there to help me minimize the taxes, but not necessarily because they have this other responsibility to the IRS. So are they working for me or are they working for the IRS? It depends, right? Some people,
right.
If I have a small client, not paying a lot of tax, not paying me a lot, how much effort am I really going to put into minimizing those taxes? So at what level would you say, if you've had, say, a tax lawyer or a tax accountant who's done your stuff for years and you've been growing, at what level do you need to revisit that and say, maybe it's time to upgrade the advice I'm getting?
Yeah. So usually the kind of clients that I work with is business owners. I've got some high net worth individuals, and they're usually business owners that are bringing at least $1 million in revenue.
To them personally, right? Or to the business as a whole?
To the business. And then, right. And again, the other key part is what's your taxable income? Because I see businesses that can bring in $1 million in revenue, but they have a loss. So sure. They don't have to pay tax. So usually it's $1 million in revenue. But the most important thing is the tax bracket. So when they're looking at the tax bracket of 32%, and that's only at the federal level, plus if you are in a state that charges you taxes, high taxes, it could just easily become 40% plus type of deal. So at that point in time, really is time for you to look and see what we can do to mitigate those taxes.
Okay. So then how does your fractional CFO skills marry with this idea of not just waiting till the end of the year to, like, what sort of advice would you give to clients? What's the first sort of question when you're planning out their next year's tax bill, not just last year's tax bill, like most people do?
It's taking a proactive approach, right? So fractional CFOs are really good at, let's take a look at your financial situation. I'm assuming a lot of fractional CFOs are working on budgets or profit analysis for 2025. And part of that is the tax liability, although maybe at the personal level, still you need to figure. I would suggest fractional CFOs to look at, the owner is going to need to pay taxes. And I, like you stated, most fractional CFOs are not focused on tax. So that's where somebody like myself can come in as a consultant and help you navigate that. Because again, it's a proactive approach. When you tell me as a fractional CFO, this is the kind of revenue we're expecting, this is the profitability, the net income that we're expecting for the business, then I have an idea where we can get started and we can help you stack or prepare a plan and implement it. That's key, implementing a plan, but the business owner can benefit in 2025 when they file on 2026. But these actions have to be taken in the same year. And that's what happens, right? Say for 2024, if you want to do some, establish a plan for in 2025, it's too late. The actions must be taken in the year of, not the year after. And it cannot be retroactive.
Yeah. Okay. So financial decisions that in isolation, let's call it best for the company, might not necessarily always be the same as what's best for the owner of the company. And at the end of the day, that company is there to serve the shareholders. Does that make, what would be a typical decision there? Is it around decisions around what to capitalize or how to increase expenses or making investments within the business? What would be a typical thing where you think this makes most sense for the business, but on the flip side, what gets the owner the best outcome is maybe something different?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I've been looking at lately is, say, for example, you're a business owner, you're trying to grow, and you want to bring in a business partner. So a portion of the company. Some business owners don't really know how to navigate how this is going to be a taxable event. There is a lot of variety of options, some money coming in, money coming out. Okay, that's great or whatnot, but how does that look for my taxes? And I think a lot of business owners would benefit from doing their homework before, doing an analysis from a tax implication. So doing the homework before pulling the trigger. Once you pull the trigger, it's done. All we can do is report things accordingly, right? So those type of things, also selling books of business as well, but also, like you say, capitalization, also entity conversion. So not sure how it works in Ireland, but here you can become a sole proprietor, then an LLC, then S corporations, C corporations, and a lot of business owners think, oh, I just changed this to this or whatnot. Well, there are rules and implications that may trigger taxable events. My job there is to look at the situation, put a tax number behind it so you can make an informed decision as a business owner.
Okay, very good. And so let's talk a little bit about your ideal customers today. You start off a restaurant, still got great restaurant customers, which is great to hear. But yeah, over the years, you've learned to navigate towards customers, your ideal customer. What would you say is your ideal customer for your practice today?
Yeah, so definitely restaurants are welcome for tax planning. And I also have expanded to service professionals, architects, attorneys, marketing companies, anything that is service-based or whatnot. Definitely people could benefit on the of my services, especially because you don't need a lot of revenue, especially service companies don't really have, you know, equipment or anything like that. And sometimes they do have really high margins, and then they find themselves year over year high tax brackets just like that. And also business owners in the construction industry. So it could be general contractors, trades, your electricians, plumbers, HVAC, because again, it's a fast growing city. And again, I've seen people start their small business 1 year and they make $200,000 in revenue, just great. And next year they're bringing in $1 million to $2 million just like that. Wow. So like you stated, right, the tax that you were working with at that point when you're making $200,000 may not be able to help you out when you're a much bigger business with other challenges that you did not have in the past.
And what's driven that growth within Phoenix? I understand it's one of the fastest growing cities in the U.S. now. What's changed there?
It's been growing, gosh, for the last 30 years. It's ridiculous how it grows. I guess the allure is the weather. People, especially living up north, and they are tired of the snow. They like the weather. Right. Lower taxes in some instances. If you live in New York, you get, or Chicago, you pay so much in state income tax and city income tax. So I would say it's the weather, lower taxes, and everything is newer. Sometimes you go to these older cities, although Dublin is a much, much older city, obviously, but this older city for American standards.
My local pub is older than America, so it's...
There you go. But yeah, it's the weather, although some people may complain about that when it's summertime and it's like, what is it, like 45 to 50 degrees Celsius, right? It's a great town. There's a lot of growth and there's a lot of things to do for sure.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I just want to ask you, so how can people reach out to you, Aldo? What's the best way to get in touch if they feel like they might want to talk deeper about how they can help on taxes, how you can help them on taxes?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a link. They can schedule a discovery call. There is no fee or obligation for that. We can spend 20 minutes and discuss that. I can provide that link to you. They can also find me on social media under my firm's name, which is going to be my last name, Aprile CPA. In LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or whatnot. Or you can text my company if you want to contact us. Send us a text at 602-842-1777.
Very good. So I have a traditional final question on the podcast, which is ask everyone this. So who's your business hero, Aldo, and why?
I would say my family. My parents, ran a restaurant for a long time, and my siblings as well. Most of my family are entrepreneurs. So I think that's one of the reasons why I have my own practice. I'm an entrepreneur myself because I know there's a lot of sacrifices, but it also gives you a lot of freedom, allows you to travel a lot more than having a 9-to-5 job or whatnot. And I like that. And I also like working with other business owners, and I understand their struggles and empathize with them. And I like to make a difference doing what I do and help them out in that regard.
Yeah. If you're in the belly of the beast, that feeling of if I wasn't here, someone else would do it, it's soul destroying. You feel like, okay, you're making a difference here. People need Aldo. They need me. I'm the magic sauce here to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have got entrepreneurs in my family as well. And I always felt like it was destined. Once you have that, you feel like, okay, that's in my blood. It's like you can never be fully comfortable within a large organization. You need to, maybe it's a, I don't know if it's a character defect or a benefit, but it's, no, I've got to be the one calling the shots here.
Yeah, I would say it's like where you feel at home, right? I've went to the corporate world, started my practice, then I went back to the corporate world. And then I said, right now I belong to, I rather have my practice and, sure. It's just, it feels right.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks, Aldo. And thank you for listening this far into the podcast. If one of the reasons that I love working with doing this podcast is I get to talk with other business kind of owners who are helping other business owners. We're exactly in that sweet spot between people who are too big for QuickBooks and too small for NetSuite. And I love working with fractional CFOs. If you're a fractional CFO and you'd like to be on the podcast, I'd love you to reach out. If you are a fractional CFO and you want to find out more about how we help other fractional CFOs control costs with our clients, you can go to procurementexpress.com. ecosystemcollaboration.com/partners. And in there, we have a webinar which explains how our software works and how it can help control costs in some of the industries we've talked about today, restaurants, construction, other industries. And we can do it in a way that means that they don't have to implement an expensive solution like an ERP. They can do it at this sort of Goldilocks zone, as I call it, between a couple of million to 10 million, let's say, in turnover. So Aldo, thank you very much for coming along today. It's been really nice to chat, find out a little bit about Phoenix, Arizona. It makes me want to go. Yeah, I think you've just added it to my bucket list.
Yeah, definitely come in between November to April. After that, you're on your own, my friend. But just let me know and we'll definitely meet up for sure.
It's a plan. I love it.